Welcome to the Revolution Church Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Welcome, welcome, welcome. I got my crazy hat on today. It's crazy hat day. Good morning. Oh, it's Palm Sunday. Maybe I'll loosen up a little bit for today. Loosen up. Oh, look at that. Whew. The old necklace with the button shirt, always classy. Well, happy Palm Sunday. We're not going to be talking about Palm Sunday today. So, hope that's okay with you. What else? I don't know. I don't see you all chatting. Usually you're all chatting by now, but maybe that's not working. Who knows? Well, hopefully you can hear me and see me. And here we are. I feel like I need to move the camera sometimes so you can see more stuff. There was your tour. Oh, hello. There you are. Roberta and Chris. Hey, so last week during the gathering here, it got recommended that we try to do a Amazon needs thing. And I don't have the link right now. I'm sorry, but I'll put it up again. So I did it. We did it. I tried it. I said, okay, well, we needed that one little printer and all that kind of stuff. So we'll try it. We'll give it a try. And guess what? Guess what? You sent us a printer. I won't say who because I don't want to, unless you want to say who you are, but I want to say thank you. So we got the printer. I got a couple books up there and a couple other things, but yeah, so that was really cool. So we have that printer. So now I've got to get all everybody's addresses who've, you know, helped support this work so we can get out there and say thank you physically. So I'm excited about that, you know, trying to keep things going. I don't think we're ever going to get out of Galatians. I mean, I would love to eventually get to our Paul Tillich talk and then to our King talk and then to wherever we're going after there. I'm trying to think of a way for us to do a book study. One of the things I was thinking about was doing it on Instagram, like an Instagram Live on the Revolution site, because I really would like to do a study of John Hume's book, because I think the ideas of peace and accepting each other for our uniqueness and diversity and even diversities of thought is vitally important to us, not just as believers or Christians, but as just human beings. And hopefully we can do that. I'm full Tammy Faye today for you guys who are watching, because yes, this is my Stone Roses hat, but as you know, I'm going through my Brit pop phase again, you know, so there you go.
Twisting my melon, man.
That's not them, but somebody else. Maybe one day I'll get a full shot and I can do my Manchester dance for you. Do the Manchester finger flick, you know, and they come out and do the dance like that. Today I saw some photos. And some, I don't know, I thinking about the ceasefire and seeing what's happening in war, is something like, I feel like society often wants us to become numb with something or not say too much in case we might offend the other. But you know, the Palestinians are being horrifically tortured and are dying and they're starving to death. And these are just, you know, let's just say these human beings, and there's got to be something to change. There's got to be some sort of change. This is not how humanity should ever treat one another. Violence doesn't need to beget more violence, because then that just begets more violence. And it's just really troublesome. And I try to, you know, stay away from things that are dividing us all. But at the same time, you just got to wake up and say, like, it doesn't matter who this is. These are, you know, human beings. And I don't think any of us want to see even our own enemies suffer like that. And especially children, you know, children are just no place to be tortured. We're in Galatians, and I just want to say, like, I really find that scholarship really does take this concept of what Christianity is to a completely different level, you know, like to a completely different way of thinking and being, and even how the faith itself has been almost constructed into this way that we've all been raised with, where we're like going to church every Sunday and we got our little community and things like this. It's like, to me, it's something so much bigger than all of that and so much more than all of that, that it's a life process. Like, I was trying to think the other day, like the last time I went into a normal church building on my own, just like for me, like, oh, I don't think I'll go to church. And it's, I mean, I was like, has it been like 25 years? I mean, I've been to church services because I've spoken at them, and I've gone there because people I loved and cared about were like, hey, you should come check out this community. But like, when I've just been like, I just want to go in. It's been a while. It's been a long while. And so, I've been deep in study, and I was really like, okay, we're going to get through four. And I've just been studying and reading and reading and going over all the scholarship of Galatians. And we're not going to get through four today. So there you go. We're stuck. We are stuck on four. We are stuck on Galatians 4. And here is the funny thing about that is that I used to kind of rush through Galatians 4. It was always kind of my least favorite part of Galatians. And this, you know, but scholarship really allows you to be, things to become alive to you, because you're seeing like, oh, this is where they people were at the time. This is what they were thinking. This is what they are going through, you know. I mean, I don't feel like you can have proper theology without proper scholarship. And my worries is that so many have a theology without scholarship, without understanding what the people were doing to, who it was to, who were talking, who were listening, who were hearing these things, you know? So to me, I feel like we have this disconnect from these letters because we don't even know who they're written to or what it's about, you know, and like what certain words meant to those folks at the time. I mean, just for example, like a lot of us know this, but like sharing a meal was so vital and so important and brought a community together. And you made a lifelong kind of like, these are my people. This is my commitment. This is where we're at we're making a covenant together. You know, things that we don't necessarily practice today that were, you know, very important. I mean, especially without technology and without all the ways of getting hold of each other. And like, you know, if you left a community, you might as well be dead. You know, the fact of just traveling to another community and having enough to eat and to be able to take care of yourself and survive the elements and the other people and things like that is extremely different times. And so we have to kind of really bring that into perspective when we're looking at these letters and these books. I had somebody send me a message on Facebook the other day that said, hey, thanks for being there. You know, I'm kind of like a Christian in exile. or have my faith as an exile or something like that. And I really appreciate your work. And I feel like you're one of the few people that I can listen to or speaks to my heart. And, you know, and for me, it's like, sometimes I feel like I'm a pastor in exile. And in some ways I am, because, you know, there was a time where I was speaking at all these evangelical music festivals and churches and doing all that. I haven't spoken in church, another church in years, not even progressive churches, you know. And so sometimes it does, but I think exile might be a good place to be, you know, because it's the idea of that we're set free from kind of the pressures and the tradition. And sometimes I think we might have to step back a little bit out of the community, out of these things, to realize, like, what does this faith look like when it's lived and not built around just a community? I mean, communities were so vital in biblical times because it's literally your survival depended on it. But also, what is it like to have in every part of your life where it's not like, you know, it's not, church is not a place on the corner, but church is just kind of life, living life every day and loving people every day and living this way and thinking this way. And like, you know, recently when I've been thinking about like politics and how we should take our faith out of politics, like really we need to not be putting making convictions into laws, you know. We should be moving away from those things, and where everybody is taken care of, everyone's equally loved and treated well and has the same rights, you know, and how that is like, you know, that's part of the faith, is realizing that like people are important. Humanity is important. It is vital. That's part of Christianity. It's not saying those folks should suffer or those folks should be forced to live the way I think they should live or not be able to have the same things because they don't do what I tell them to, or, you know, that's just not this faith. And I think often when you break out of those mold, those small customs, those small things that we've built over time, those new kind of laws that we've built, like I said, you know, like that whole like accountability when we were talking about last week, like we're still under protective custody, you know, like going to church is like, what are you up to? What are you doing? You know, you're still. And then I talked about that movie where the guy smokes a cigarette, and every time he lights a cigarette, he gets punched or thrown through a window or splashed with water, you know. That Jerry Lewis movie from like 1980. But yeah, it's like when we get away from some of that, we start to have to live life on life's terms. I always think about like when, you know, we'd go to camp, Christian camp as a teenager, early teens. My mom would always send me off to Baptist, the Southern Camp Orlando, I think it was called. And you would get this like spiritual high, you know. And you didn't want to leave because you knew if you left, then all the things you had to deal with are out there, you know, oh, I got to go deal with the real world and live life on life's terms. And sometimes I felt like almost the job of the church and why they had so many things was almost to keep you in that camp idea of like, you know, we're all safe as long as we're together, but don't go out there in the real world. And that's just not living life on life's terms, you know. And I learned about living life on life's terms in the 12-step program, you know. I'm a recovering alcoholic, and I still have to I love to hang out in bars, you know what I mean? But that's the reality of every day, is that there's always a choice there, and I have to do it one day at a time. So anyway, point being, I don't think exile is necessarily an awful place to be, and I have a bit of a small smidgen of a feeling that a lot of you feel like you're in exile as well. But guess what? We're not. This is our community. This is how we are going, like, hey, we can do it how we want to do it because we're also human beings. We can live this way and live our faith the way that we feel convicted to do that. You know, I mean, hell, there's like 8,500 different denominations out there who are telling us which way is the right way to live. And I think we've got to get to a point where we're like, I'm not going to, you know, I this is how I'm going to do it, you know. And we're not going to set up rules and regulations. What we're going to do is we're going to try to love each other. And we're going to try to be a community, a diverse community, but not just of skin tone and sexuality and things like that, but also of thought. And, you know, that's what we'll try to do. And then someone can come along years later and change that and get everybody back into a warehouse. So when we went through last week, we did a little bit of eight, but we went four. 1 through 7, and I think we did 8 and 9, but I'm going to do 8 and 9 a little bit again, so bear with me, but it'll go somewhere. One of the things I wanted to mention, though, is like Paul uses slavery a lot, and one of the things that I've realized within this deep dive is that slavery, this is not, he is not insulting slaves. You've got to remember that they were, all these folks have been living within occupied territory. Rome has taken over everything. A lot of these people actually probably were slaves at the time, and knew slaves or had slaves or were slaves, or, you know, this was something that was going on. And that's not to belittle like slavery as, oh, it wasn't that bad. I'm not saying that. What I'm trying to say is that this is that he wasn't belittling it because it was something that these folks lived with every single day. Not as like, I'm a Southern, you know, I'm a Southern lawyer, and have you seen my slaves? Not like that, you know. It was like, you know, these were people that you knew, and it was something that was regulated. But why he's pushed, talks about slavery so much is because slaves were like sometimes seen like family members, but weren't able to get any of the inheritance. There was no inheritance allowed to them. And so when he uses these terms, and of course freedom was preferred to slavery, obviously. I'm not, want you to know that not, I'm not saying that biblical slavery is okay. I'm not saying that I disagree with all of it altogether. But what I'm trying to say is that he's wanting to get this concept of us saying, like our inheritance, and our inheritance is being free from the law. Our inheritance is Christ, all these things. And he's saying, like, you know, when, you know, and he's saying this to slaves too, is that, hey, you guys' inheritance is Christ as well. Because remember, he says there's neither male nor female, slave nor free, for we're all one. So we have to remember that as well. But what he's trying to say is about the inheritance. And he's trying to, and you got to also remember, inheritance is not for the dead, it's for the living. And I think often we think the inheritance is like, well, we'll inherit heaven one day. But that's not what inheritance is. It's not what you get when you die, it's what you get when one you love dies. So anyway, just want to clear that up for the folks in the cheap seats. All right, so Galatians 4:8 says, formerly, when you did not know God, you were enslaved to being that by nature are not gods. Also here he's talking about the Gauls probably had very different religions. The Judaizers, the Jewish Christians had their Jewish Christian, but so he's also talking about what he felt to be like false gods and idols and things like that. But he's also saying laws and stuff that were also Jewish laws. So he's saying, by nature, you're not gods. Now, however, that you have come to know God, or rather to be known by God, how can you turn your back again to the weak and beggarly elements of the spirit? And there's a couple things that are really interesting here about this. And this part where he goes, now, however, that you have come to know God, or rather to be known by God. And I always just thought that was like a really like cool thing. Like, you don't know God because you're just a human, and you're finite, and God is infinite. But that's not what he was saying. After looking deeper into this context, is just like we hear today, like the lost, they're lost. A lot of people thought that their gods didn't know them, especially like, you know, these people who were, you know, making sacrifices to God and things like that, and that these gods just kind of existed without them, even kind of ignoring their sacrifices, and that these gods just went on and they were kind of lost to these gods. And what he's saying is you're not lost. You know, you're not a lost person. You're not unknown to God. God knows you. You know, you're not out there searching for gods in other places. God knows just who you are. And I thought, well, how cool is that? You know, I mean, like, you're not lost. So when he says that, that's what he's saying. He's going, rather God knows you. Like, you may have known God before, but God knows you now. God knows you. You're not lost to God. You're not this lost person. And I think that says a lot about how, you know, we always treat people as, oh, the lost, you know, they're lost. And they need to be found. And unfortunately, it's our job to say, like, no, we're introducing them to God, you know, somehow. And it's like saying, no one's lost. How can you turn your back again to the weak and beggarly elemental spirits? And the elemental spirits were obviously earth, wind, fire, all these things. But he was also saying, he goes on to say, how can you want to be enslaved to them again? But he goes on to put those idol worship along here with 10. Now listen to this. You are observing special days and months and seasons and years. I am afraid that my work for you may have been wasted. So he's also saying these holidays that a lot of people, one of the things that was thought here, it was probably the case, was is these group called Judaizers who were in there trying to be like, hey, you have to get, you know, circumcised, you have to celebrate spiritual holidays, you have to go to the temple on these days, you have to do these things. They were coming in as well. And as you know, Paul was a Pharisee, a Jewish teacher, you know, and here he's saying that these things are just as useless. Like special, and I thought it was funny that it was Palm Sunday that we're talking about on Easter, and I'm not talking about Palm Sunday today at all. And I've never been a big like, oh, it's Christian holiday, so I have to talk about this. No, he's saying like these things are useless in themselves, you know. And calendars were a big deal, you know, because there were different calendars that people would argue over which were the real days. And I think Rome had 8 days. And, you know, so there was all these things, and some days were seen as unlucky, you know, Monday, am I right? but no, some days were seen as unlucky. And it's funny too, because one of the biggest holidays that Rome loved to celebrate was New Year's Day and New Year's because of their gods and stuff. So it's really funny how we do take things on like that. But some days were seen as unlucky. So you would abstain on certain days, you know, and what these folks who came in, Paul's critics were coming in and saying, you know, you need to learn to abstain special days, celebrate certain days, before you can even be circumcised. So this idea was, is you're not quite a believer. You don't quite have God in your life until you celebrate these days, recognize these days as special, recognize these holidays, you know, and you follow the law. And then you can be circumcised and then you can be complete. And it's really interesting because when we're going to get into the whole story about Abraham here next week, it's really interesting how Paul plays really loose and fast with that, but he uses it for a really particular reason. And then it really does make sense at the end. And it's really interesting as one of the things I was reading, because I read a little bit before from what's going on coming up, is how Calvin and Luther were a little bit uncomfortable with how Paul used his allegory. So next week will be really interesting. They didn't think that was the best use, but also it doesn't really line up with their theology. So that might be another reason why they didn't think it was great for him to use. But to the point where it really does start to seem, when you look into it, that Paul sees these the Sabbath and the calendars of a matter of tradition as really just a matter of little consequence. It wasn't something that was seemed to be really like, you know, you can do these things, but just know that they don't have anything to do with your faith and your belief. Because I'm sure he took Sabbath, did these things, and practiced them as well, because he said he was all things to all people. But to him, it was kind of this thing of like, it's just really the of little consequence. And I find that to be really interesting, because I feel like we've reset up this issue where these things aren't as little consequence to us, you know, like, I remember just even like going to church, and I never really liked worship. I never liked to stand up and raise my hands and do any of that stuff. And sometimes I would just sit, and I remember the pastor coming over one day and be like, is everything okay? I've noticed you're not really engaging in worship. You know, and I'm like, it just doesn't make me feel connected. It kind of makes me feel disconnected and strange. And so it's just not something I enjoy. And I had that happen a few times at different places. Like I was somehow rebelling against God because I wasn't singing. So, you know, to me, I was like, it's great. But to me, it's little consequence. You know, we're not actually ushering in God into this place, because if God's everywhere, then why would we need to do that? And if God's a ground of being, then, you know, Anyhow, goes on to say, I'm afraid that my work for you may have been wasted. So Paul's really upset that these folks are going back to these old ways, back to the old traditions and these things to sanctify themselves to somehow allow God to know who they are. When he's saying, you are known by God, God knows you already. You know, these things are just community things to do with your community. You know, there's nothing really actually spiritually significant to these days and weeks and months and even these years. He goes on to say in 12, he goes, friends, I beg you to become as I am, for I also became as you are. And I always thought this was just him saying, look, I'm free of the law, so don't, you know. But when he says this, this is another thing you find out from doing really in-depth studies of these books, is this was to have friendship was to see someone as your friend, as your second self. I mean, this whole idea of love your neighbor as yourself was part of their custom. And it was a Greek custom as well. So it wasn't the most huge deal when Jesus said, love your neighbor as yourself. But when he said, your neighbor is also your enemy, then it became like, oh, shit, you know. So I got to love people who aren't my friends like myself. That was the real radical change there. But for them, traditional friendship meant you were equals with that person. You were the same. And so when he says, friends, I beg you to become as I am, for I also have become as you are, you know, he's saying, like, we're still in this together. And we are friends when we live this way. But when these folks take you back, we're no longer like each other. And the promise that has been made is no longer there. You know, you kind of nullify grace when you try to keep up with these laws and these works. And we are no longer alike. We are no longer, our friendship is no longer bonded. That's also something that sometimes someone would say when they were begging for their life in court. I am like you and you are like me. You know, this type of same thing. He goes on to say, you have done me no wrong. You know that it was because of my physical infirmity that I first announced the gospel to you. And what's interesting here, and it's something else I'd never caught before in our studies, is one that you can see here is that Paul, when he says friends, you can see Paul's great love for the Galatians and that they also had a great love for him. You know, there was this, and he did not want his opponents to put the yoke of the law back on them to make them less than him. But in this 12 here, you know, sorry, 13, where it says, you know that it was because of physical infirmity that I first announced the gospel to you. And we all have these, everybody has these different ideas, and it's just not even worth trying to figure out what the physical infirmity was. But here's another idea that I got from my weekly studies this week. Could be a sickness or an injury. But it's possibly that sickness or injury that brought him to Galatians. That maybe this wasn't something somewhere where the Gauls, that he wasn't necessarily headed onto his missionary trip, but that his sickness delayed him on his trip and he ended up here with them. It may have been from persecution as well. He may have been beat with an inch of his life and was dying and went to the Galatians. Because he does say a few things that give us a little bit of idea, but the idea is, he goes, you know, it was because of my physical infirmity that I first announced the gospel to you. So he's basically saying, I was there because I was sick. Though my condition put you to the test. So something that was obviously a horrible sickness or things that was not easy for people to have to deal with and take care of. You did not scorn or despise me, but welcomed me as an angel of God, as Christ Jesus. So you have this like powerful moment of him saying, like, you know, also unpleasant appearance at that time was often seen as a weakness or seen as a curse of God. invited ridicule, all these different things. I mean, it was just, these were just different times than the times we live in. Or maybe it was just like being unattractive in these times. So it was bad enough. But he said, you treat me like Jesus. You see the gratitude and the deep love again for it, that Paul has for these folks. And I think that's something so interesting to continue to look at, as this was not about, we got to get you guys saved and get you to heaven and do all this stuff. And he doesn't talk about that. He's not talking about the afterlife. He's talking about living life. And he's trying to bring this community together. And he's afraid and he's saddened and he's hurt by the fact that they're going back to the law and that they're forgetting grace and they're forgetting that they're loved just as they are, as we'll talk about when we go through Tillich, you know, talking about grace, then you are accepted. And he's so heartbroken by this. You know, and he's still saying, but you treated me as though I was Christ. I mean, you loved me like I was the Son of God. You loved me like I was a God. You took care of me like I was someone special and I was a mess. And yet you loved me. So you see these things that he puts in there that sometimes we just read past, where he's saying, you know, earlier he goes, you know, friends, I beg you to become as I am, for I also became as you are, basically saying this loyalty that laid there within the friendship, which is really interesting because, you know, often we see loyalty nowadays as a bad thing, like, oh, because we think it's like something that just like politicians and police officers do, you know, to make us feel worse or to play a game or something with our lives. But loyalty also was a part of friendship. And I think it still should be a part of friendship. I think it's very different when it's a part of friendship, because loyalty will also tell you the truth when you're a friend. But you can see the love and the loyalty that he had for these folks. He's, you know, my condition put you aside. I like the concept of him coming in badly beaten or hurt from something that really tested him, that ended up testing the people he worked with, but also brought them all together. I mean, that would just make a really beautiful story, but I can't tell you for sure that's what it is. And obviously the scholars aren't going to make a gamble on that. Did I read that yet? Sorry, guys. My notes are, I set up a different note system. Yeah, we already read that. What has become, 4:15, what has become of the goodwill? What has become of the goodwill you felt? You know, they said, you were teaching me as Jesus, and now what's happened? What has become of the goodwill you felt? For I testify that I had been possible, you would have torn out your eyes and given them to me. And so this has caused a lot of people to think that Paul had eye issues. But this was, eyes were the most valuable organ in the body, seen as the most valuable organ of the body at the time. This is basically how you said, like, I would have given my right arm for that. It was a very similar saying. It's like, you know, so he's saying, like, you guys would have given me your right arm, you know. You would have done anything for me. And that's the torn. How I now become your enemy by telling you the truth. So again, he highlights the past loyalty to him. He shows and reminds them of the self-sacrificial love they had for him. And he's reminding them of their intimate relationship, of their covenant that they had together. And, you know, here in, when it hits, soon as it hits 16, have I now become your enemy by telling you the truth? It shifts. But then again, there's that loyalty with friendship that the real friendship has in it. And that love that real friendship has is that it's better to tell the hard truths than a gentle lie. You know, so this is a real friendship that he has with this community and with the people in this community. And I think it's important to see that, because it's often, I don't think we see that part of Paul. You know, I don't think we build Paul up in that way where he's this real lovey-dovey, intimate guy. But when you read and sit down with these scholars and look over this stuff, you go, wow, this guy really, like, and puts so much into such a small book. And it talks about, one of the things it talked about is how this book is way more intimate than, like, say, the book of Romans. Like, the book of Romans is like even a bigger version of Galatians in some ways. But it says, you know, you can clearly see that he didn't have the intimate relationship with the people of Rome. as he did with the Gauls. So that kind of puts this letter into perspective more too, because here you have this great book on grace that is not just a book about grace and love, but it's also a correction letter to correct people saying, you guys got to get your shit together and get back to what you were doing. You're going to be torn. You're going to tear each other apart. And also him reminding them who he is. And it's just interesting because I always read through 4 really fast because I always thought he was just trying to remind them that, hey, I'm really an apostle. But now I look at 4 and go, he's also reminding them that I'm your friend. We are friends. We love each other. I have no reason to lie to you. I have no reason to sell you something different or try to win you over. I won you over when I came in. You treated me like Christ. So I think these are really important things to allow to kind of marinate yourself in a little bit with that and go, oh, you know, really allow that to sink in. This isn't theology. This is relating to the people that he loves and cares about and reminding them of the love and care that they showed for him. And I just am like kind of blown away by that I missed it. But, you know, what are you going to do? Here, I found it. So now I found it. And here we are talking about it. How awesome is that? Of course, we'll never get through the book of Galatians because I'm finding all this really cool stuff. And I just want to tell you all about it because it's been really affirming and it's been beyond affirming because it's one of those things. And this is what I like about going into scholarship is you hear everybody deconstructing. And I would say if you want to deconstruct, get into biblical scholarship. That will deconstruct everything from you. The church won't look the same. Christianity won't look the same. Nothing will look the same. It will take it apart. Like, don't just sit around and get on the freaking interweb and go, Christians are a bunch of dicks and I can't stand it. And, you know, I didn't get enough pepperoni in my pizza and they told me I was this or that. You know, that's people. People suck. Any group of people that you get around, you're going to find legalism in different ways. You're going to find manipulation in different ways. You're going to see humanity out there. So that's not just something that's special to Christianity, that the people who, when they get into large groups, start to get into the group think, and then it gets really toxic. That's humanity, folks. So to me, rejecting that part is not really the major parts of deconstruction. Yeah, get out of the church or maybe you're going to and things like that and take some time off. But I say get into scholarship, get into understanding, like look, buy books on the Greek and the Hebrew. And really, if you want to take things apart, that's what's going to take things apart. And you're going to go, oh, you know, and you're not going to see all this stuff that we've held as sacred cows as sacred anymore. You're just going to, I can live with or without it. Like Paul's saying, Sunday, but who cares? You know, like if Chick-fil-A wants to be closed or open on Sundays, who cares? You know, it's just the day. You know, you want to go to church on Wednesday or Sunday, it's whatever, you know, doesn't bother me one way or the other. It has really nothing to do with much, you know, and we've been taught something so differently and raised with something so differently. So if you really want to take apart the system, is learn the system better than the people who are teaching us, because I guarantee you the people who are teaching us, they focus more on theology, which is what is the ideas of God and the thoughts of God. And they kind of minor in the scholarship, but the scholarship says this is what's happening and this is what's going on with the people and this is where this person's probably coming from because this was the tradition of the time. This is who they surrounded by. This is who they knew. And I think that allows you to create your own theology that becomes something that is actually probably more solid than theology that was built on more supernatural ideas. So there, I said it. Even though I think God is the ground of all being, which seems pretty supernatural. And I also got that from a theologian, but a theologian who was also a philosopher. But yeah, anyway, there you go with that. But he goes, have I now become your enemy by telling you the truth? And this made me think of my own experiences in the church with this shift here. You know, because what he's seeking from the Galatians is a good type of loyalty at this time, the friendship loyalty that we're talking about. You know, and it was something that was expected. I mean, that type of loyalty in friendship was always seen as a virtue of true friendship. I mean, it was seen as literally a virtue of true friendship. But I've also been to the place where I've been to the areas where I was praised as the world's great speaker or the next Billy Graham or, you know, been prophesied over, this man is going to spread a fire across the nation. I mean, that was literally one of the prophecies I got. Like wildfire across the nation, you know. And then you say something that you feel convicted of, and is that the truth? And all of a sudden, you're not the person of God or the messenger of God anymore. Now you're an outcast, you know. And you go, well, this is what I believe. Well, that's not the truth, you know. I had somebody argue with me about on Instagram on the Revolution page about peace and stuff. And I'm like, well, they're like, you can't bring peace and not preach the truth. I'm like, well, which truth? You know, and I talked about the troubles. And I said, well, who, you know, in order to peace, they both had to kind of compromise, you know, which truth do you go with? And he goes, and then he just wrote capital V and then truth, you know, and that's not an argument. That's not a conversation. That's just, I don't know what that person believes at all. Don't know what their faith is, what anything about them, except that they go around yelling at people to say, follow the truth, and you're not doing the truth like I think the truth should be done. So that puts truth in another strange area as well. It makes you wonder, what is the truth, right? But he goes on in 16, because have I now become your enemy by telling you the truth? And so, yeah, like it's wild when you do these things. Another thing that's wild is often too, when you find that those folks who often maybe even come to the same conclusion as you, often continue to exclude you because they almost don't like the fact that you remind them that one time they didn't think that was the right thing. Like the LGBTQ thing, I was all ahead of a lot of evangelicals and ahead of a lot of emergent people and ahead of a lot of the red letter Christian people. And we would have these conversations. I would go to the end and push everybody and say, oh, we got to talk about this. We got to talk about that. Oh, we don't want to talk, you know, we're not going to talk about it. Or we talk about it. And then I would get shut down or everybody would say, no, this isn't a social justice issue or this isn't that or this isn't this. And now a lot of those people are like a no-brainer, like, oh, yeah, of course I'm there. Of course I include my LGBTQ brothers and sisters. But they don't talk to me anymore. A lot of them, most of them, none of them come back and be like, oh, Jay, thanks for pushing us on that or anything. Nope, nothing. I see them talk about it. I see them posting things. I never mentioned that I remember sitting in a room arguing with them that this was an important issue. You know, so that happens too as well. So it's not a fun road to toll, obviously. It's not the best one to pick. It doesn't win you a lot of friends and neighbors. And when you tell hard truths, and then even when people come over to your side, it's not like they come back and they're like, we want to celebrate, thank you. You know, you paved the way. Everyone send him money and support his ministry. He's fantastic. No, they just kind of like, you know, slide you aside and act like you never existed. It's bizarre. I mean, it makes no sense. But this is what Paul's dealing with. And I think this is why Paul is being so passionate about it. What I'm trying to say is, I empathize with Paul's message at this point. It makes me feel closer to Paul because I've been in similar situations and live within similar situations. So have I now become your enemy by telling you the truth? They make much of you, but for no good purpose. They want to exclude you so that you may make much of them. Now, what does that mean? They want to exclude you so you make much of them. And this also is something, like I said, 4 was something that I kind of read through quickly and just covered the highlights. And then we got on to 5, to the important stuff again. But this is very valuable stuff. You know, what's happening here is Paul reveals that these folks were being excluded from the people of God until they became completely circumcised. So they were using this kind of thing to exclude them from meal sharing and all this stuff and saying, you've got to start practicing this. You've got to start doing this. And then, you know, maybe you can move on to this and then you can be circumcised and then you can share meals with us. So, you know, you need my approval to make sure that you're known by God and that God knows you, you know, and that you know God the way you should know God. Now, how many of us has experienced that type of thing growing up in communities? That's when I say we're still under the law. We still are practicing the law in certain ways. Like, well, you know, you can join the church when you go through our leadership camp, or you can do this. Oh, you're still, you're gay. And you, well, if you decide not to practice, you're, you know, then you can come on and become a member of our church and join. And none of this is there. Paul's saying like, no, 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 no. There aren't ifs, ands, and buts of what gets you to becoming known by God, or that God knows you. God already knows you. There's nothing you have to do. There's no holidays. There's no cutting the tip of your penis off. There's none of this stuff, because it's all about genitals, isn't it? We love to get all crazy about genitals. And if we don't do that, then we love to make it all about, you know, identity politics and get involved in that, and then make Christianity like this an identitarian faith of some sort. This doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Sorry, I'm getting a little preachy right now, but it's like this shit gets in the way of us experiencing something that's there, free, and accepted. You are accepted. You are loved. You can't do anything about it. And these people are trying to exclude you so you will celebrate them. They want you to feel guilty so you come back every week and you donate and you do this and you follow them, and it gets bigger and their community gets bigger and it gets bigger and it gets bigger and it's bigger, and they have more influence and you think more about them. That's what they want. That is the sin of the Judaizers. That is the sin of these people who are Paul's enemies, saying, yeah, we want you to think that somehow your communion with God depends on us and what we tell you to do. I will tell you what, you don't ever have to watch Revolution again. You can sit there and go, you know what, I am accepted. Then you've done it. Boom, great. Even if you don't believe it, it's still true. You are accepted. God knows who you are. What is God? I don't think God's a man in the sky, and I'm not going to make God into like a... But the ground of being, you are accepted by that which is greater than yourself, that is an infinite. Your finite being is accepted and seen by that which is infinite. And so that's what Paul's saying, is he's saying, like, you know, these guys want you to make much of them as these spiritual leaders. You know, as that they somehow have the key to the key. They are as gatekeepers of the kingdom of God. That's what they're gatekeepers. You hear that now thrown around all the time, because we're all so jaded and angry. Well, just don't start gatekeeping the blah blah blah. They just gatekeep the blah, 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 whatever. Gatekeeping punk rock or gatekeeping whatever. I don't know what people gatekeep anymore, but I do know that these people are gatekeeping the kingdom of God. I used to call them kingdom monitors, like hall monitors. You know, like, we're watching you, Baker. We're watching you. You know, and most of those folks are just, you know, like, there's so many other Christians who would tell me I'm not a Christian. I mean, I remember one time when I did come out as affirming, and one of my board members said the Holy Spirit, you know, and God are against you. And I'm like, so Jesus is still cool with me? No. I said, no. And I had been reading, if you read a lot of Brendan Manning, you get a lot of confidence. And I'd been reading Brendan Manning at this time, and he goes, you know, God is against you and you will not prevail. And maybe he was right financially, but every other ways I just still try to live my life and do what I do, and I get to talk to you, and how awesome is that? But I said, no. I said, the Father is quite fond of me, because I knew I was accepted, and not just accepted, but loved and liked. Not everybody likes me, but the ground of being is okay with me. And so I said that, and he kind of smirked, and he just didn't know what to do with it. Was he going to say, oh, no, God isn't fond of you? You know, I'm like, well, you know, to me, that as soon as you're like, God's against you, I'm going, well, I mean, then and I knew this person totally was an atonement person. What does that mean? Then that crucifixion was just kind of half-assed. And you'll find that a lot of these very legalistic people who say they hold the crucifixion and atonement as like, you know, he paid the price for our sins, don't really believe it. And they believe that really you have to pay the price for your sins. And that's what these guys are doing. Saying you've got to pay a price to get in. And we're going to gatekeep them and say who's in and who's out. And we will refuse you fellowship until you are circumcised. So that's why Paul is so passionate here. That's why I'm so passionate. And we're almost done. They make much of you, but for no good purpose. Now remember that, for no good purpose. It's like they make much of you, but it's not for a good reason. It's really for their own, serving their own thing. But for no good purpose, you want to exclude you so that you may make much of them. 18 says, it is good to be made much of for good purposes at all times, and not only when I am present with you. And what he's trying to say here is, Paul's arguing, he's like, listen, my zeal is good and true. And you know my faithfulness because my faithfulness is loving you. My faithfulness is in that idea that now, become as I am, for I also have become as you are. What he's saying, that traditional friendship, that connection, you know, reminding them that they're not lost and all this stuff. He's like saying like, yeah, I have zeal and my zeal's good. And it's okay to be happy, you know, it's okay to make much of you. It's good to be made much of for a good purpose. So like, you know, you can make more of me if you want, because my purpose is loving you and wanting to see you set free and wanting you to see you live life well. This isn't about an inheritance of something that you get. The inheritance is something you get when someone else has died, not when you die. So remember that, you know. And he's saying this, my zeal is for good. My zeal is for your good. You are loved. You are accepted. You are, you know, so he's like, you know, that's why we celebrate people like Dr. King. And, you know, why I like John Hume and why I celebrate and make much of these folks is because their zeal for us was great. Their zeal for us made us better people and continue to make us better people and continue to show us. You know, these folks love their enemies and see their enemies as equals as well. They are setting us free as much as they're setting their people they're fighting for free. Do you understand like that? But that's a beautiful concept, and that's the concept that revolution is bringing forth now, and what we're working towards is to do more of that, is to set us all free and learn to be tolerant of each other. We've got to learn to be tolerant of intolerant people too, because you know what? I want them to be able to eat and pay their bills and do all those things as well. Then maybe we can actually argue well and disagree well when we all are being able to live well and we're not all trying to undermine one another's lives. So Paul's arguing that his zeal is good and true, good on him, his own faithfulness, and he loves them. 19, he says, my little children from whom I am again in pain of childbirth until Christ, you know, in childbirth until Christ formed in you. And, you know, he says, I feel like a parent to you. And you are suffering needlessly. My little children for whom I'm again in pain of childbirth until Christ formed. He said, my heart is broken because I'm in pain because you're suffering. And that's how it should, we should be in pain when we see others suffering and hurting. You know, how awesome would it be as if like the churches that we got hurt with and stuff, like how much would it help us if they came to us and, hey, you know, we got misguided for a while. We treated you like shit. And that really, we shouldn't have done that. You know, I mean, think about like, it would disarm you in so many ways. Like, it's funny because I talk to some of these folks, especially on the Revolution Instagram account, some of these different folks are like ex-Christian, former Christian. And I just start chatting with them. And they're really suspicious of me and things like that. But I'm not trying to convince them of Christianity. But what I am trying to say is like, you know, there's differences. There is nuances. There are differences. And what do you, you know, don't throw out everybody and everything, you know. And that's hard too, because they're so distrustful that you, and I understand why they don't trust, you know. I watched my parents scapegoated by conservative Christians and liberal Christians and progressive Christians and mainline Christians, you know. I watch everybody just kind of be like, screw those weirdos, you know, and I get it, because I do it to people sometimes too as well, but we're called to do something a little bit differently now, and what he's saying is, I feel like I am almost like I'm giving, like you're bursting out of me, like I am pregnant with you again, you know. There's a whole thing that goes through pregnancy at that time and things and scholarship. I mean, gosh, you guys, I'm reading so much stuff. And then it gets at the end and goes like, but they probably weren't thinking that. And you're going like, I just read 3 pages of something they probably weren't thinking. Great. But you learn. Have something to talk about it. Tea time. And I was thinking when I was reading, it's like labor pains. I was thinking about, you know, when we grew up, we're like, I brought you into this river. Parents say this, I brought you into this world, I'll take you out of this world, you know, when your parents get really, really mad. And then I feel like that's, in some ways, he's not saying I'm going to take you out, but he's just saying like, you know, these are the pains. These are the, you know, you got grace. And I've had this happen in my own life with people where I've seen them understand grace and then fall, you know, and then fall into old church systems and come back and tell me how horrible I was. And then I was compromised. And I'm like, but you found this church, you went to this church after you came here. What's going on, you know? And all of a sudden I was bad. And then them come back years later and they're like, oh, I don't want anything to do with God or anything, but I'm sorry the way I treated you back then. You're going like, shit, you know? This is why we got to work this good news, is so we don't have to, these cycles can stop, you know? It ends with 420. It says, I wish I was in the present with you now, because I could change my tone, for I am perplexed about you. Man, have I been there. I've been there with people. As a leader, as somebody who's been doing this for 30 years, I've been there. You become perplexed by how quickly people change with new ideas or different thoughts or different community. How much groupthink will change people as well. There is a fear to not fit in strange groups, you know, and it's always, there's the groupthink is probably the biggest one, which is so wild to me. Because a lot of we've always really dealt with nonconformists growing up in my look. Someone just said I look healthy. That's what my mom used to say when I was fat. So, you look healthy, son. But Paul's opponents do have a geographical closeness to the Gauls, which is really strange. So Paul's dealing with, he's writing this letter. He's not with them. He wishes he could be with them. And at that time, letters were seen as kind of like your you know, a surrogate you. You know, letters are vital back then. I don't think we hold anything vital like a surrogate us anymore, not even video calls. We're just become so numb to this type of communication. But it was this, like, well, here's my presence. I'm sent you a letter, you know, and it wasn't putting it in the mail. You know, you had to find somebody who was traveling that way and ask them to drop by and believe that they would do it. You know, there's a lot that went into that. But Paul's opponents have a geographic presence. And unfortunately, absence was not making the heart fonder with them. And of course, he wished he would be face to face, because he is perplexed. He is perplexed because, like, you guys loved me so much. I loved you so much. You know, what's changed? And wild, right? Like, and I'm sorry, I'm getting quiet. It's just because I'm reflecting on where I've been in my own work, my own life, and over these 30 years, and where I've seen people go. And usually when you get that yo-yo of like going between like grace and legalism, people just usually just give up and go to the church, just get out of the church and get done with it. And since I don't believe in hell, it's not that big of a deal. But I do believe in these teachings, and I do believe in community, and I do believe in the ground of being. I do believe following Christianity has got things for us to help us make love people more. And I am a Christian. I am a believer in that sense. So even though a lot of people would argue that I would not a real Christian, which is whatever that is, enjoy that if you want. That's okay. Let's have a talk about it and see where, what box did I forget to tick? Or are they being kingdom guardians, heaven guardians, you know, kingdom monitors, grace monitors, if you will. How do we do this? You know, well, it's perplexing. It's tough. And it's, I think we're working the way there. I think we're embracing great scholarship here. We're embracing some great people who are doing great work to bring people together. And this is about an experience of loving people better, loving ourselves better, living life well, and helping others to live life well, and bring justice to all of humanity and find unity through diversity. But this is hard work. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of work. It does not happen overnight. I've been doing this type of work for over 30 years, but really probably the past 20 years, I've really been focused mostly on grace and that type, this message. Anyhow, that's the word for today. We'll get into the rest of Galatians 4 next week. I can't believe we're still on Galatians. I can't believe I've spent this much time on Galatians 4. This is the second week. We've already done 2 weeks on Galatians 4. You know, this is nothing I saw coming. So I'm pretty excited myself about all this scholarship. It's a lot of reading and memorize. And I write things down in it. And I realize I have to just kind of sit down and be quiet after I've read and let it just kind of marinate onto my brain. Hey, listen, if you love Revolution, if you care about Revolution, in order for us to continue, we do need your financial support. We also need you to retweet and re-Instagram, but there's only like three people who've been doing that, and they've been doing it forever. On X, like if you're on X or Twitter, holy crap. How cool would it be if you liked something on there? Like, well, Revolution's on there. I'm not on there anymore, but Revolution's on there, and we don't get likes, we don't get retweets, we don't get anything. And that's part of our work is getting out there in the social media world. We could really use your help there. So that's one way to help. But you know what? Financially, we desperately need your help. And we'll put up the Amazon link too, which helps us because now we've got a printer or like a list printer, and we'll continue to do that. But you can go to revolutionchurch.com and do that there. You can support us there. We have Venmo and PayPal. So we don't have the other ones yet, but those are the ones we're using now because we're old. We've been around a long time, and we really could use your support. Also, just to be able to get more books and to continue to do the scholarship, those books are not cheap. They're not like $10 books. They're like $150 books, and some I've bought on my own, but I'm just not in the place where I can really do much, where I can't really spend much outside of, I can't go outside of a budget at all right now. Things are so tight. And the church can't even afford to buy books right now. So I would love to be in that place again. And that comes through your support. Revolutionchurch.com. It helps make this better, gets the message clear, and we'll continue to do this work. What is this, guys? It's a community of diverse people, not just of color and sexuality, but of diverse thoughts. And we're a community that talks about Christianity in different ways and hopefully provoke people to think differently. So that's what we are. Thanks for showing up, Kane. And everyone else, we'll see you next week. Don't forget to like. Likes help. Don't forget to likes, follow, subscribe, do all that stuff that I always forget to say. And the YouTubers always have such a good... My kid watches YouTube all the time. He watches all those YouTube guys. And I like, subscribe, and I think you're supposed to put on warnings, right? Like... I like What's the Crack because that's from, I like that Kane said that because that's from, I love going to Belfast and everybody says it's there. What's the crack? I don't know. I'm tired. I'm exhausted. I'm sleepy. I'm tired. But yeah, love you guys. Have a great time. I'm not thinking straight. I will see you next week. We will finish this. Don't forget, please donate if you can. It really does help keep this on. Keeps us going. Like and subscribe and share. Yes, that's what I was trying to think. Like, subscribe, and share. Creak, creak, creak. Oh gosh, now I'm gonna have to work on it. That's probably the right way to spell it because Americans don't spell anything wrong. Oh, you spelled it wrong. Yes, so please like, subscribe, and share. Look at that. I said like, subscribe, and share, and we had one, and now we have five. So like, subscribe, and share. That helps us. And maybe we'll become YouTube sensations. I'll like breakdance or something. All right, folks. Thanks a lot. Thanks for coming. Thanks for putting up with me. See you next week. Same time, same channel. Where? How do I turn this thing off?
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. To make your 100% tax-deductible donation today, please visit revolutionchurch.com/donate. You can also learn more by clicking the donate section on the website.